This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to our No Holds Barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Lohfeld. Bob is the CEO of Lohfeld Consulting Group. Bob, welcome back.
Thanks, Mark. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Too long. We'll try to shorten that cycle. But I do hear you on other people's shows, so that's okay.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I actually listen to the station. I actually enjoy this station. Don't question my taste. Tell us a little bit about Lohfeld Consulting.
We're now a 9-year-old company devoted to helping government contractors win more market share, win more business. And we do that by providing proposal support services, helping them write better proposals, helping capture, which is the activities leading up to a proposal. We do process development work for companies interested in optimizing their business acquisition process in the government market, and we do lots of training classes around town.
I was going to bring that up separately, but that's good. You do lots of training classes. I know you do some stuff with Dell Tech.
Yeah, we do a class a month publicly for people, and those classes are capture management, proposal management, and proposal writing. And then we also do an accreditation prep class for the Association of Proposal Management Professionals, and it's for people who want to get their professional accreditation as a proposal manager. So we teach the class and administer the examination.
Okay, cool. Tell us a little bit about the, I know you've been involved with APMP National Capital for, I don't know, at least 5 or 6 years now.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great organization, and it's the largest chapter of APMP International, which is a worldwide organization devoted to the profession of capture and proposal management. The National Capital chapter is the largest chapter in the organization. And today, two of our staff members are past presidents of the National Capital chapter. And one of them, Beth Wingate, is serving as the chief operating officer of APMP International.
Yeah, I saw that. And it's part of her LinkedIn title now. Very cool.
Yeah, she's a prominent speaker in the community and a blogger and a great advocate for the association.
I usually send my referrals to her, Brenda, and you when I'm going. I try to copy all three of you when I'm doing that.
Yeah, most appreciate it.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, you do things that I have no desire to pretend to do.
Yep.
So,
and APMP, if I could put in a plug for them, they focus on proposal and capture professionals. Capture is a new community of interest for APMP, and they'll be standing up a main thrust to address the interests of capture managers. Today, we address the interests of proposal managers in the government market and also in the commercial space. So you can think of it going forward as having three areas of interest or communities of interest.
Okay. Well, proposals aren't a heck of a lot of good in our market without capture.
Every great proposal was born during capture.
It
began there.
There you go. Any events coming up that APMP just had its...
We just had our annual conference here last week for the National Capital chapter of APMP. And then we have a conference coming up next month in Atlanta, which is the Southern Accents Conference.
Yeah.
And then later in the year, we have our annual conference in Atlanta.
Okay, but neither of those is exclusively focused on government. Usually when APMP NCA hosts an event, it is primarily, if not exclusively, government.
That's true because of the concentration of government practitioners here. The other chapters are split about 50-50, government and commercial market. So much more commercial in the other chapters.
Okay.
Does that vary in federal hub cities? Do you know? Is it like a little heavier in federal hub cities? Like
it is
Chicago.
Yeah.
Or?
Chicago is more of a mix, 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
But you get out to Denver, and we pick up again. The Denver chapter has a pretty good federal focus to it.
I would think.
And there's a conference in Southern California, a chapter in Southern California, and that tends to have a pretty good federal focus.
Cool. So what's the next class that you're doing or the next classes you might be doing with our buddies over at Deltek?
We have one going on today with about 24 people in a class on proposal writing.
Okay. And obviously, you're not doing that.
I'm not teaching it. Fortunately, I'm not. Brooke Crowder from our staff is teaching.
Okay.
And then the class after that will be capture management. And the date is about a month out. So the capture class, you can register by going to our website. You can also register through Deltek's website. And the classes are being administered by the Deltek University.
Okay. And your website is?
www.lofeldconsulting.com, and it's spelled L-O-H-F-E-L-D.
Lofeldconsulting.com. Cool. Let's talk a little bit. We're going to start now and probably carry over to second segment. But the I don't know if you feel the same way. I've never seen the government contracting community in this much of a flux, maybe ever.
Yeah, I would agree. And I've got a lifetime of experience doing this. And this is the period of greatest uncertainty that I've seen. And it's compounded by the election cycle, which we deal with every 4 years, but the sequestration initiatives, the uncertainty about the going forward proposition for Department of Defense and for healthcare and our government market. And we watched earlier companies in the industry beginning to take corrective actions, long-term strategy actions, where they were seeing revenues flattening out, not getting the growth they had, and they were taking cost reduction initiatives. But now everybody is sort of frozen like the deer in the headlights and deciding to wait it out the next 30 days to see what the outcome of the election will be. And then hopefully whoever wins the Congress will get serious about managing the country and begin paying attention to their day job.
Do you really believe it?
I'm hopeful. That's my outlook. Hopeful.
Hopeful's good. I tend to believe things like that when I actually see them, usually mm-hmm. in my rearview mirror, not looking forward. But getting Congress to act is kind of difficult.
Yeah, it's what we'd characterize as a twitchy time. Mm-hmm. But the good news is that the fiscal year 2012 just ended, and it went out with a roar. There was lots of activity in the market, lots of procurements going forward, lots of agencies trying to get awards in place or get proposals in submission in September. And now October tends to be a little bit more timid, but I think November will rally back, and hopefully we'll see a good close to the year.
Okay. Give me your take on the areas of LPTA and fixed price contracting.
Yeah, LPTA, it is so clear in DOD's policy that LPTA, which is lowest price technically acceptable evaluation criteria, should be applied to commodity bids or bids for services where the consequence of failure is not significant to an agency. And yet this criteria has drifted over into the realm of procurements that were traditionally awarded under a trade-off, a best value trade-off, where technical and management approach is traded off against price. It is really devastating to our industry to see that creep into traditional best value awards, and devastating because companies are saying, let us provide the minimum acceptable solution to the government. Nothing more than they've asked for. Keep it to the minimum. And then the lowest price credible bidder ends up with the award. So it's been a difficult row for lots of the government contractors to compete in this market, where traditionally the government strived to get the best service it can. Now it's striving to get the cheapest. I worry that the old expression, good enough for government work, will creep back into our practice area, and that's not good long run for anyone.
No, the good enough for government work. But, I mean, you know, the LPTA thing reminds me of the second iteration of the desktop contracts back in the early 90s when they were really going for kind of your bare minimum white box kind of solution. Mm-hmm. And the refresh on those vehicles made it virtually impossible to get anything that was useful.
Yeah, and we're going to see the same thing here. So I'm a believer that LPTA is a short-term knee-jerk reaction to the sense across government that we need to cut spending, and that wisdom will prevail in the longer term or the midterm, and people will say, well, if we have to cut, let's cut out initiatives altogether, but the ones that we take on, let's do them with gusto and do the service the best we can.
Cool. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Bob Lohfeld. Bob is the CEO of Lohfeld Consulting Group, which I consider the premier capture group in our tiny little gene pool here. $1 trillion or so, you know, but it's a fun community. But that being said, there, because of all of the issues coming down on us, there's significant contraction in the market, and I know you have a few thoughts on that.
Yeah, there is, and when we look at revenue from the major corporations this year, a lot of them have flattened out, and their revenue growth is diminished. Some have contracted, and yet the companies are working hard to continue a positive revenue slope, which means they are feeding more aggressively in all the markets. This really heightens competition across the government market space and raises the bar competitively for firms that will win, that will prosper, and in the long term have positive revenue growth and positive earnings growth.
What does this mean for small, medium, large contractors looking at virtually any bid right now?
Yeah, I think there's going to be an awakening for some companies that have in the past enjoyed a free ride, either in sheltered programs in the market are a free ride because the market was expanding and they were just riding the crest of that wave. As the market flattens out, they're going to have to earn their way, and some of them will be casualties of the competitive landscape. They just haven't learned to compete, won't be able to compete, and they will give up their market share to other more aggressive firms and other more successful firms.
Okay. Now, successful and aggressive firms are doing things, obviously, that some aren't. Let's get into some of the particulars.
Yeah, one of the main things you see is that the aggressive firms are really mastering the art of capture management. And capture in the government market is everything that a company does from the time it identifies a new business opportunity and makes a decision to pursue it until the RFP is released and then ultimately until the contract award is made. So companies go through a disciplined process of understanding the requirements and developing a solution and positioning the solution and understanding competition and building teaming strategies and setting price to bid. All of this goes on before the RFP is released, and the companies that do this capture practice well will be the ones that give rise to great proposals on the back end of the capture process.
Okay.
So capture management paramount. Defined, repeatable, managed, measured, optimized processes is just essential to be successful in this market.
Yeah, keep your pipeline full. It always helps.
Indeed, yes.
But, you know, traditionally I've had a lot of people tell me that capture management is only the back end of the process. The BD guy goes out, finds the business, tracks the business, hands it off, and only when it gets towards the RFP process, then capture person stands in. Your view is different.
Yeah, we want to see capture come in very early, and we want to see a clear handoff from business development to capture. Capture is a team sport where often business development is a solo practitioner finding and qualifying opportunities. When we move forward in Capture, it becomes a team activity to bring together some of the best and brightest players in a corporation to create a strategy, to create a solution, to position that solution with the client, to build advocacy and raise their probability of win. So team sport kicks in, and often it kicks in well ahead of the RFP release. Then there's another transition that occurs from the capture team to the proposal team, and we are now working with companies to help them create great proposals. And we're taking what has historically been a good proposal and trying to move it to becoming a great proposal and clinching the deal on the back end with the proposal.
You've been teaching this. You probably taught it when you were at OAO and at Lockheed, at least internally, but you've been teaching it publicly now for 8.5 years
now, yeah. Publicly.
Your process is different than some.
It is. It's a streamlined process tailored strictly to the government market, and it's designed for companies largely in the services business or IT, systems integration, systems engineering, professional services market to gain market share, to raise their win probability. The process has stood the test of time. It's essentially the same process we began teaching 8.5 years ago. We just have a lot more capture analytics around it today that prove convincingly that the process is effective and raises win probability. And we teach the capture analytics along with the process.
Okay. You want to walk us through that process?
Yeah, some of it I do, and then I want to talk about proposals too.
Okay. Well, which way do you want to go first? Do you want to do proposals first?
Yeah, let's take proposals because it's a topic we haven't talked about a lot. Lots of companies write proposals. It's a necessary part of our business. And we get assignments to review these proposals, often as a result of a loss. And what we have been finding is that proposals are generally mediocre. Some are better than others. But we've developed a model based on reviewing proposals that identifies great proposals as having seven characteristics. And we've published this will be published in Washington Technology here shortly. So the characteristics that we look at is every proposal needs to be compliant with the RFP, compliant to the evaluation criteria, the instructions that are contained in the request for proposal. And I always thought that companies did pretty well at that. But in reviewing proposals, we find that they don't. And we did a survey of about 150 companies and asked them how well they do on compliance. 15% of the companies said they nail it every time. 35% said, well, most of the time. 35% said they wish they could, and 15% said they didn't know it was important. So there's huge opportunity for improvement. So characteristics.
Didn't know they had to?
Did not know. I was stunned, but they didn't know. And when you read their product, you can see that they didn't know. So compliance is the first characteristic, and rock-solid compliance with the RFP instructions and evaluation criteria. The second characteristic is that the proposal has to be responsive to the RFP, not just that you have a place to put the response, but when they ask you to describe your configuration management plan or your recruiting plan or your staffing plan, that's actually what you write about in the proposal. And not all companies stay on point. They often feel compelled to take company boilerplate and squeeze it into the proposal, even though it's not asked for.
So they're doing a cut and paste.
Yeah, and all of this becomes a huge impediment to the government evaluator. Or they're writing, but they're not understanding what's being asked for, and they're writing what they know, not what they're asked for. So responsiveness is the second characteristic. Third is a customer focus. And we find so many companies write a proposal, and it's all about the company. All they do is brag throughout the proposal how great they are, world-class, uniquely qualified, all of these phrases that just drive evaluators crazy. What a proposal should do is say, it's all about what we're going to do for the customer, how we're going to make the customer successful. That's what the customer wants to read about. So it's customer focused, not company focused.
Does agency knowledge come in to play there? Understanding
hugely it does. And we'll see companies will call up and say they want to bid a job, but they've never met anybody at the agency. And we tell them, save your money, give it to a charity. You'll feel some reward for that, and you'll be better off than trying to bid without customer knowledge or our specific procurement knowledge. So customer focus is huge. It's all about the customer. The fourth characteristic is that the proposal has to be compelling, and compelling proposals are rich in features that produce real benefit to a customer. It's not about writing enthusiastically. That's not the objective. The objective is to create a proposal that's rich in features that the customer will say, we need to have those, and that makes the offer compelling. So to be feature rich, you have to have a solution or an offer that's designed to achieve the objectives of this customer.
Okay. On the compelling issue, though, how important is the actual writing of this, and what style of writing really are we talking about?
What's more important, and this is our seventh characteristic, is that the proposal be well written, and that it avoid the use of there's about 200 words floating around in our lexicon that should never be in a proposal, and yet every amateur proposal writer wants to use them.
Okay, well, let's pick it up after the break. There, you're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Bob Lohfeld of Lohfeld Consulting, and you can find Lohfeld at Lohfeld, L-O-H-F-E-L-D, consulting.com. You can find his classes there and at the Dell Tech site. If you need help on proposal writing, proposal management, or capture, I have always recommended Bob's stuff at the top of the list in those categories. So let's pick up at number five. Compelling, yes. Number five, this is like Steve Covey, right?
Yeah, that's actually sort of modeled after that. This is seven characteristics of highly successful proposals, and he had a very similar title that went global in his work.
We'll work on the viral aspect of this later.
All right, good deal. So number five is the proposal has to be easy to evaluate, and you begin to realize this, how important this is when you're an evaluator and you start reading through page after page of techno gibberish that you sort of understand but not really, and you're looking for something that's noteworthy in all of this technical discussion. If it doesn't jump off the page at you, you're gonna miss it. So it becomes really important that we design the response so it can be easily scored.
Let me ask a slightly different question here. When the review committee is looking at that giant stack of stuff, if their attention is not grabbed early, do they really read the entire proposal?
I think they do not. And you can see it occur in solicitations where there's a large number of responses. No one can sit there and read 39 proposals and pretend that they are cognizant of all that's going on. So evaluators develop a technique that we call skimming. And this is our sixth characteristic to
what a segue.
There you go, yeah. To be effective as a proposal, you have to design the proposal so that an evaluator can skim through it, flip the pages, look at the graphics, look at the captions, look at the section headers, look at the icons.
Stop there a second. Graphics and icons. How important are the visual aspect?
I am always amazed at working with reviewers that there are some reviewers who will read every word on a page and they'll never see the graphic. And there's other reviewers who will never read the text. They just look at the pictures, study the pictures, and both of them arrive at a score. Independent paths. So as proposal architects, we have to communicate our message to both readers. There's the visual and there's the text. And not every reader sees them both. So part of the plan is to communicate visually the story, the score, the rationale. And if I could go back to this concept of skimming, what we've seen evaluators do is they pick up the proposal, they flip through it, they get a first impression. If they like the proposal, it goes in one pile. If they don't like it, if it doesn't communicate to them through that skimming process, it goes in another pile, and that pile is the one that's just not going to get selected. So this, you have to make it through that filter. Through.
This is almost like an Osdabuff, is it, where you show up with the folder that's got like 300 things in it instead of a concise one-pager.
Yeah, it is so true that you have to catch their attention early. They have to believe that you're a contender. And when they do, they'll skim it, they'll make a first impression, then they'll go back and read it in detail to substantiate that impression. But they can also throw you out on first impression. And we've seen that happen. We've gone back and worked with companies and gotten them back in when the procurement was an early stage down select, recast the way they communicate the proposal and had them win in the final round.
Okay,
but they were discouraged from going forward based on first submission.
Would that have anything to do with the protest period too? You know, if you feel like your client's proposal was not fully evaluated?
I
mean, your clients are going to be fully evaluated because they'll meet all these criteria.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and that's a characteristic of a great proposal. It will get evaluated and it will get the due diligence that it deserves.
Okay.
Poorly written proposals, the government picks the losers first. That's the easy ones. You get rid of the losers. And those just jump off the page when you start reading the proposal.
Okay.
And that takes us to the seventh criteria, which is well written. And I just want to cringe now as a proposal reviewer when someone opens up the proposal and the first paragraph reads, "We're pleased to submit this proposal. We're a uniquely qualified, world-class company using best-of-breed process and procedure, and we are committed to doing a great job for you." You just want to shred the page.
Does anybody ever start off with, you know, we're average or we suck?
Oh, no. No, typically the smaller the company, the more hyper they feel about their importance in the universe.
There's an adjectival necessity here for smaller companies to look bigger.
And this is what happens to writers because they have nothing to write about. They don't have any content. They haven't solved the problem. They haven't developed a solution. So they fill the page with puffery that makes them feel exalted about what they're writing. And the evaluators, I have never yet seen any contract awarded to a company where the justification was the company said they were world-class, best of breed, and committed to do good work.
Or unique.
Yeah, it never makes it to the finish line. And yet we fill up page after page, paragraph after paragraph about how great we feel about ourselves. And we have to turn that all around, get those words out.
Let's dispel one right now. If a company were truly unique, would the government do business with them?
They would have a basis to do business with them without competition. But
if they needed whatever they did.
Sure, yeah.
But if you're that unique, what's the odds of offering something the government wants?
Yeah, let's take a good look at the market. There's 8,000 companies around the Washington area that provide services to the government. And
only 8,000?
Maybe more, but a lot of them look a lot alike to me. And yeah, to the government evaluator, they all look alike.
Well, last time I ran the CCR numbers for Maryland alone, there was about 24,000. Yeah. Now, admittedly, that's across the NAICS codes.
Yeah, it's broader than services. But,
yeah.
But I wouldn't dispute that there's more than 8,000. Yeah, hovering around the beltway, feeding off this $100 billion that flows through.
There you go.
Through our Washington market.
Yeah, I mean, we just need a little piece of that to get by.
So what we tell companies now is focus on these seven criteria, and often companies will tell us, well, we wrote a great proposal for this procurement and we know it's great because we won, and they'll also say, and we wrote a proposal for this one we lost, so it couldn't be a good proposal.
It's the same proposal.
Yeah, yet what we see is that the outcome is dependent on more than the proposal. You can have a lousy solution that's presented really well. That's a good proposal. but the government didn't want to buy it. Or you could have priced it wrong, or you could have had terrible past performance with this customer. All those things will hang you and keep you from getting an award, but you can still have a great proposal. So we're trying to transcend this concept that all winning proposals are by definition great proposals.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. 15% of the companies that you surveyed said that they did totally good proposals, totally compliant proposals. Do you review proposals after the fact for companies?
Yeah, we do, and we call it benchmarking or a postmortem. Mm-hmm. And every company that we have done it for, it's been a real eye-opener for them.
Okay. Now, any of those 15% fall into the postmortem? You should have done some things different?
Probably, because there's a bit of grade inflation when you self-evaluate and mm-hmm. say, we always do this. Well, always doesn't turn out to be always. And even great companies can turn out proposals that where there's great opportunity for improvement.
Now, we know that larger companies are going after smaller activities, smaller bids in this market. In your experience, is the quality of the proposal, does that have any direct correlation to the size of the company?
Some, because the larger companies will go after larger deals. They'll spend more money on the proposals and on the capture, and they'll turn out really, really fine product. But if we look at the mid-market, deal size sits between $50 million and $200 million maybe in the mid-market. Mm-hmm. And we can have smaller companies write great proposals and great companies write mediocre proposals. And it's all about the talent of the team that's assigned to do the capture and the proposal effort.
Okay. Cool. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Lohfeld. Bob is the CEO of Lohfeld Consulting Group. You can find Bob at Lohfeld, L-O-H-F-E-L-D, consulting.com. Again, the classes, the capture classes, the proposal management and proposal writing classes are second to none in the market. So if you need help in any of those arena, and virtually everybody does, attend. It's worth the freight. I don't know what the freight is, but I guarantee you it's worth it. If you can improve your proposals by 5%, your win rate will go up. To that end, let's talk a little bit about analytics here.
Good. Yeah, thank you.
Take it.
And I'm so glad you said, if you can improve your win rate by 5%. We have this belief that if you're going to manage something like a business acquisition lifecycle or manage your win rates, you have to be able to measure what you're doing along the journey to produce the win rate. And that gives rise to a term of art called capture and proposal analytics. And if we go back to this concept of our earlier discussion about seven characteristics of highly successful proposals, we encourage companies to measure these characteristics for every proposal that they do. And it's really easy to say, here's a spreadsheet. It has seven characteristics on it. Let me read a proposal, and then I'll color score how well we did attaining each of these characteristics. And the color score we use, there's four of them, red, yellow, blue, and green, which is traditional across our proposal market. So we ask that every proposal that is done, you make up a little spreadsheet and you measure how well it achieves these seven characteristics. Do it at your red team review, do it at your gold team, and then do it in final submission. And then keep that data, make that part of your proposal file. And after you have won or lost, go back and look at how well you did on these seven characteristics and correlate that with the outcome. So the mathematics to do that is not too difficult. The field is called econometrics, and using color scores makes it pretty simple. And what you'll begin to see is that there is a huge correlation between how well you do in these seven characteristics of highly successful proposals and the outcome. And you can measure that, the improvement, incremental improvement in responsive content or customer focus in a bid. You can see it raise your win probability. And it will make your team a believer. just measuring, just saying that you're going to measure this, will improve the team's performance in these seven characteristic areas. And then measuring it and dealing mathematically with the with this will give you the confidence that as an executive you're on the right track and you can see incremental improvement in win rate.
Okay, let me ask something slightly different here. What if somebody doesn't want to take their team to a public class? Do you ever bring this in-house?
We do. We teach about 40 classes a year. So the Deltek instruction is one class a month.
Mm. Other, so you got about 30 others.
Other than December and August, we don't do classes then. But so there's 10 public classes, and then we do private classes all over the country.
And so you can get the entire team on the same page.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful experience to do it. And let everybody not only work through the instruction, but discuss their own process internally and how they're doing things. And the takeaway from the class is always the same. It's now that you're somewhat enlightened by spending a day talking about all this, what are you going to do different in your own company? And we go around the room and ask each person, how's your job going to be different? What are you going to do to make it better? And hopefully there's an immediate improvement just out of a one-day training session.
Okay. What's next?
Analytics doesn't begin just in the proposal phase. It begins early on in capture. So we take the same concept of measurement and roll it all the way up front and begin measuring how well we make decisions about pursuing an opportunity. And we have seven characteristics that we measure to make a pursuit decision. And there is absolutely huge correlation between those characteristics and the final outcome. The dominant characteristic is do we understand the customer? And if we don't,
I don't mean to laugh.
You would be surprised. You'd be surprised. We see executives all the time that want to make bid decisions using a criteria that's not in our model. The criteria is greed. And if it's big dollars and it looks like it's a small proposal, let's bid it. And then the executive goes off and does whatever the executives do on the weekend while the rest of the people in the proposal tank give up their nights and their family life to grind out one more proposal. You can see statistically, absolutely that proposal will be a loser. And it is so clear through capture analytics that over time you can build a model and then you use the model to train the executives that make the decisions to say, if you go down this path, statistically, we have a 21% chance of winning. And if you have a different opportunity, you can show statistically you have a 50 or 60% chance of winning right off the bat.
Okay, but you know, understanding the customer is one facet. What about the customer not knowing you?
It's both. You know, it's you have to understand the customer. They have to know you, and to get them to know you takes some real effort, and it's not just sales calls. It's in-depth discussions about the mission of the agency, deep understanding of that. It's deep understanding of what they really want to accomplish through this procurement. What's the end objective? Understanding the things that never make it into the RFP, but yet those are the underlying needs and desires of the agency executives, and being able to address those later on in your solution development and creating features that help them achieve these objectives. That's what makes a deal a winner. And without that discussion, it has very little chance of being successful.
Now, if you know you're technically able to do what they want, and you also understand that this is a contract that's going to come up for bid on a cyclical basis, would it be better to pass on round one and come back 3 or 5 years later after you've had a chance to develop a relationship somehow with key people in that agency and go after number two?
It's a great comment because I hear all the time the rationale for bidding is that this will introduce us to this agency. So
we should do it.
And the government, the executives that I've talked to about it, I get two reactions from them. The first is, this is a month or two after the bid is awarded. They say, we didn't know that you bid. We didn't remember you bidding. And the reason is your proposal was so terrible, we never really looked at it. And the other reaction I got from one is they said, oh, yes, we remember your bid. We took pages out of your proposal and pasted them up on the wall, and we called it the wall of shame. We had never seen a proposal so bad or someone so misunderstand our objectives that we hung your pages up on the wall. We remember you, and we hope you never come back. That was the reaction. So, you know, it's better to be well-prepared, do a good job, and bid to win, not bid to introduce yourself in a feeble way to to an organization.
Patience is key. You know, did I ever forward you the Amex study where it showed that companies coming into the market took an average of 19 and a half months to win their first business, and this is when they're clicking on all cylinders?
I haven't seen it, but intuitively I would know that that's right. It's not a market for tourists to race in, hand out brochures,
right,
and expect to win.
I will make a note to send you that study. I had the woman who did the study for American Express on a couple of times. It's the open form. It's Victory in Procurement, which is
excellent.
Of a weird title because they're attracting all these small businesses and whetting their appetite and setting them up for major disappointment if they don't click on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. And everybody doesn't.
Yeah, it's a lot of competition in the market, and the best and brightest will continue to be successful, and the amateurs will just get ground out of the market.
Okay, well, I'm sorry you said that right then, because I'm going to ask you right now for your final impressions, because that was a good line to wrap on.
Go for it.
So the market conditions are abysmal. Give me your top two or three things in 60, 70 seconds for must-haves for success.
Good capture management process. Defined, repeatable, managed, measured, and with measurement you can optimize the process. It's a must. And we watch companies, the bigger the company, the more successful they are, the better they execute capture. Second thing is that you have to have a good set of proposal objectives. And we like to see companies use these seven criteria. If you work at the criteria, you'll turn out good proposals. You need to work on a good solution, a creative solution in the capture phase. You need to have good past performance. You need to have good pricing. But if you focus on these seven characteristics, at least you'll be writing a good book. The government will enjoy reading it, and you'll get your fair evaluation. And if you don't, you won't.
And if you go back to that pond again, at least they remember you fondly and you're not on the wall of shame.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the objective. Win more. Be focused. Win more.
Cool. My guest today has been Bob Lohfeld. Bob is the CEO of Lohfeld Consulting. Again, you can find them at Lohfeld, Lohfeld, consulting.com. I suggest you do so. This is not my day job. The Government Market Master Program I run at Capital College in Laurel, Maryland is off and running. If you need information on that, find the information in the Government Market Master Group on LinkedIn. And while you're there, think about connecting with me. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and we appreciate you listening.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.